This program is intended for mature audiences only.
Every little girl dreams of finding the one. Fairy tales fill our heads with notions of a prince charming who will ride in on his horse and sweep us away so that we can then live happily ever after. The one is the one who will be our lover, our companion, our soulmate who will travel faithfully with us through life so that we need never be alone. First of all, let's face it, there is no such thing as Prince Charming, at least not one who doesn't at some point show his face as a frog. And second of all, we all have our journeys to take, and sometimes you just have to do it on your own. So where does that leave us? What is the one, if not that person who will save you from yourself? Can you have more than one one? And does everyone have a one, or is that just for a few special few? From One Taste Urban Retreat Center in San Francisco, we bring you A Taste of Sex Reality Audio, a podcast featuring personal stories and perspectives from people engaged in the conscious exploration of connection, sensuality, and relationship. On today's episode, we explore the notion of the one through two stories. First, a woman who realized it's just time to find the one. And second, a couple who've been together for 31 years and still like each other as much, if not more, than on the day they met, but only because of an affair that nearly destroyed their marriage. I'm Judy Silber. Stay tuned. Part 1. Looking for the One. When she moved into One Taste Residential Immersion Program 2 years ago, Marcy Prochowski made a conscious decision to temporarily let go of looking for the one. Her relationships up until that point had kind of worked, but not really. After a certain time in the relationship, she always found herself dissatisfied. At One Taste, where she would live in community, Marcy saw an opportunity to redefine what she wanted out of relationship, but without the pressure of feeling like she needed to have all of her needs met by one person. Here's Marcy.
I think I let go of the need to have it. It's like One Taste and the people here became my primary relationship, you know, and I was getting filled up by my connections here. And I, you know, and there was enough intimacy, both physical as well as emotional, that was sustaining me and a big motivating reason why I even stepped in here on such a more full-time basis was like, okay, this recognition that I was doing, the way I was doing relationship was great for a while, and then I just started getting really disgruntled.
In letting go of having perhaps one partner, correct me if I'm wrong, but it sounds to me like there was almost an intentional letting go of that when you stepped into being a resident at One Taste.
Yeah.
And then an intentional kind of spanning out like a spider, you know, like having more than one thread reaching to more than one person. So instead of just having that one primary partner, your primary partner became a community of people. And so I'm wondering how that helped to, and what that helped to loosen up in you such that now you can begin thinking about having a primary partner again.
Yeah. Well, I think I'm not as myopic, you know, in terms of when I relate to people. Like, I totally get how important it is for me to stay connected to other people. I can't get everything I need from one person. And I don't just mean, like, you know, intimate sex, that sort of thing. But, you know, like, I want to hang out with that person because I love the type of humor they offer. I like that person because we totally brainstorm incredible ideas and get into action together. You know, and how can I have a life that is really rich and full with all sorts of relationships?
Did you find a certain level of satisfaction in having a community be your one? And then what's the piece that still has you want to reach out to just one person in addition to having a community?
Because I really enjoy that. I want to have that fluidity to be able to go back and forth.
So have more of a continuum?
Yeah, between like the one person where there's real incredible focus, and then there are other people that I'm relating with. I really want to like create and offer like the gifts that I have to other people. I totally get that I am not that great at doing that as a solo act. I don't really want to do it as a total solo act. I think for an efficiency place, like I actually get more done when I'm doing it in partnership than when I'm doing it by myself. And also I want to have someone like that's invested, and I'm invested in them too. So there's partly that. I just want it.
This is a very sensitive topic for you, and I'm wondering what it touches in you that it becomes that.
You think that's unique to me?
No.
That I get choked up, sort of?
No, I don't. I think it's universal, but I'm wondering if you can say what it is.
I can barely talk. And the only thing I can think of right now is that it still somehow like activates this part of me that thinks that I can't have it. And somehow I'm just alone, period. I imagine, I mean, who's to say any guarantees, but I imagine it's still like just, you know, healing whatever little bits and pieces are in there from being adopted, you know, because it feels like it definitely is this young place. It's like young, scared. And it's like that little scared part of me that once died that gets activated when in the presence of a lot of love. The interest in having relationship be my priority is coming to the surface, and also slowing down to be able to feel more of it, not rushing off to have the next experience.
So do you think that's perhaps why this desire for the one is coming up?
Because I'm not rushing as much?
Not rushing, and then also because there's this investment in relationship that where there has been a letting go of the ego.
I think that combined with the fact that I'm turning 40 in December, okay. You know,
yeah.
It's like, okay, like if I really want to make a family happen, I need to actually prioritize, like get my priorities straight.
I'm curious, like what if the family doesn't happen, or what if the one doesn't happen? Like,
I think that if it doesn't happen, it's because I naturally change my commitment to what it is that I want.
So then that sensitivity that we touched into, then it's not a fear of that it won't happen. It's more like it's just a natural sensitivity that's in there. Is that true?
You mean like what's bubbling up right now?
Yeah.
Man, I wish I understood it more. You know, my mom always loves to tell the story about how even from an early age I had this huge capacity for love. And, you know, that I was, you know, like 6 months old or something, and we were at some 4th of July event, and some other baby that was older than me was really scared, and I crawled over to comfort the baby. So somehow I just feel like in some ways what it is the container of my body, and the energy hasn't yet grown large enough to hold the love that emerges. The energy's just huge.
So that there's a desire to love. So then does it feel like the one is what will allow that to emerge?
No, I mean, I think it's I'm on my path and it's emerging, and the one will step in and get to be part of the scene.
Thanks, Marcy. Before we go to part two, I want to tell you about a special offer that we have this week. We figured that after this podcast, you'd probably start looking for the one. And since at One Taste, we're about helping people get what they want, we figured you would need some seduction tips. So we're bringing back Stephanie, whom some of you will remember is the 24-year-old, very hot lesbian who has quite the way with women. So if you want Steph's tips on seduction, which I might add are very good, quite practical, but also not as obvious as you might think, Go to onetaste.us/seduction. Again, that's onetaste.us/seduction for Steph's tips on seduction. Back to the show. Part two, living with the one. Okay, let's say you find the one. What do you do then?
We have Anne and Chris here. And you guys have been married for how many years?
Well, we got married in 1991.
But we actually moved in together in 1979.
And then when did you first meet?
We met in 1976.
Let's go through those statistics again. You've been married for...
So we've been married for, 17 years. Living together for 29 years. And known each other for 31.
And for how much of that time would you say that you considered each other the one? We'll start with Anne.
That first kiss with Chris was like, whoa, something amazing is now happening.
And how old were you?
I just turned 20. Long braids, very quiet, shy, dancer.
Did you have a concept that this would be... for a long time?
No idea at all. Yeah. No idea at all.
Yeah.
No, that was, and that just happened just kind of over time.
Wow, we've traveled so far.
The day that we met, we were living in this big house together in Los Altos, artists and musicians, and Anne and her boyfriend had moved into the house, and I was out on a motorcycle ride with one of the other women that lived in the house. And I came barreling on this motorcycle with this woman on the back, and she was all giggly and everything, and I came walking in.
Yeah, and I was like, who is that? It was like, you know, it was sort of anti-magnetism. It was like a strong reaction of like, who is that guy? He's so like strutting and arrogant and clearly the womanizer of the house.
What did you find attractive about her?
I mean, probably in the beginning it was partly a challenge.
Yeah, it was like next. I thought, oh, he's getting around to me now.
Yeah, it sort of was that. Yeah, yeah. It was actually like, oh, I've been through... Oh, well, she's cute.
And where was that first kiss?
We'd done one of our night walks and walked back to the house. It's late at night and... You know, see how you do, how it is. Like you're sitting, fire, they're talking, kind of wondering. Okay, when the natural next thing would be some kind of touching. You know, it's like, okay, when is that going to happen? But then it gets later and later, and it's actually time for bed. And I remember feeling that connection. Also being, there's a part of me that's so truthful, just unsocially conditioned. And it was very honest for me. My truth was, when we walked upstairs, I said, love you to spend the night, and I don't want to have sex. I just remember waking up with you.
Well, I remember that, yeah.
Yeah, I guess we both changed our minds.
Yeah, I think we did.
About not making love.
Yeah.
We made it through the night, but waking up, and then just somehow, you know, faces rolling over and mouths finding each other, and went, holy God. This is like more than a kiss. I mean, just so soft and opening, and my whole body open in a way that, I mean, God love my first boyfriend. He was great, like, first boyfriend. But this was another league of... what it means to be a woman in a body. I could feel it just through my mouth.
You've been listening to A Taste of Sex. We'll be back after this short break.
Listen to A Taste of Sex, Erotic Poetry Reading, a companion program to life in an orgasm-based community. It's open mic night at One Taste San Francisco, a weekly audio program on personallifemedia.com.
Welcome back to A Taste of Sex. I'm Judy Silber.
In 1978, I went to an amazing dance workshop.
And it was far away. So here's, on Chris's end, Anna's gone. And we're sort of writing letters and making phone calls and stuff.
How long was she gone for?
I think it was just a summer, actually. And maybe it was going to be longer. But towards the end of the summer, and I was still, like, you know, free, and everything was, you know, good. It's the 70s, and and I think it was getting towards the end of when she was going to be gone, and she said something like she's going to go camping or something, and she just said she was going to go do something, and I just had this kind of like in the back of my head, this like, wait a minute, that doesn't, just some like antenna went up in me that's like, there's another guy, and in that moment, something shifted inside me. And I think if there's one moment that you're asking me for about when we know when is the one, that is one of the sort of...
When you were threatened, that was the moment.
Exactly. Exactly that. Whoa, you're taking it away.
Now I know I want it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so I wrote her a letter and, she's going to move to New York. That's what it was.
And then the letter said, I love you. Here I am with this letter. I go, oh, great. Like, I'm sitting there. Chris is now finally turning his heart totally towards me. Here's this other man who, you know, I've just connected with. And then my previous boyfriend right before Chris writes me and says he wants to get together again. I've had three lovers, and they all three converged at one point in time.
So what did you think? What did you think when you got the letter?
No, I don't think it wasn't a conscious thought process. It was more on a felt visceral level of just knowing and turning fully towards Chris.
What was the knowing?
See, this is where the one, it might be like that he was the one. Very clearly, that's where my body, that's where I wanted to be.
Well, Anne did come back and moved in with me in San Francisco, and... We sort of stalled. It was noticing that this thing was going to go away, this thing called Anne. But I think I didn't quite know how to deal. Like, what do you do now? I think for me, I fell into this relationship is about security.
Mm.
And that carried for a number of years for me. I have an image that I used to have, which is Anne and me in a lifeboat together. And we've somehow escaped something, and now we're okay because we're together in this lifeboat.
So then at what point in time did it shift for you? Did it stop being about security?
It definitely shifted in 1995. Chris kind of like popped the raft by having an affair.
I was... sort of bizarrely lost at that time. Just had like no idea kind of about anything. And I remember that I have one memory of sitting at our kitchen table in Sausalito, and I was putting jam on an English muffin. And I remember looking down at the way my left hand was holding the muffin with my thumb and my middle finger, and the way the jam was going on it. And I just started crying because I can't explain. It's like, I've always done it this way. I'll always do it this way.
Do you think that you knew that you were in some way breaking yourself down by doing something that was so radical for your relationship?
Oh, interesting. Breaking myself down. Oh, weird. No, I don't think I did. I probably on some level felt the opposite. And I'm almost guessing here that it was like, oh no, this other thing will help keep me afloat.
Some people say you get one crisis in your life that if you can get through it, changes who you are. definitely the lifeboat got popped. And it was the best thing, like to be plunged to the center of the earth, like Persephone, the myth of Persephone, and go down. And if you can get what the, you know, what the crash is for, if burning all the way, and it wasn't like, oh, I'm now going to burn all the way. It was just what my system did. I had traveled far enough and was awake enough that I was very conscious of, like, if I'm going to be, if my heart's going to be shattered, I'm going to use it to let more love in.
Chris, how did you tell her?
You know, I'd been at a party with some people, with this woman, and I hadn't told Anne. And Anne said, oh, you were at this thing yesterday. And immediately I could have lied and justified and gotten out of it. And I just, in that moment, I made this snap decision. It's like, oh, I'm not going to lie.
This rip-roaring, like, scream goes through my body, and I, like, what? Like, what happened? You know, say something to Chris on the phone, slam down the phone. Yeah, it was like if a power line goes down, you probably know when people grab onto a power line and just lightning, you know, electricity shoots through your body. And yeah, that sent me on a good 9 days of not sleeping or eating and being in a definitely, I guess, what some people consider an altered state. I've never done drugs, but I know I was very surrendered to an experience on a level that is not as present for me now, but I know that it still informs who I am to have walked so ripped open in that way. Well, the part before, you asked who I was before, always trying to control everything. If I make a phone call, well, what am I going to say? And then after I say it, what did I say? I was so back to instinct, and something larger than me was also finally back online. Walking late at night, and even my senses, you know, being able to smell somebody's shampoo with three houses down, or I was just all open, wide open.
What happened next?
I remember looking when I was living in the house, in our home, back along, you know, by the, on the coast, and the moment of actually looking in the yellow pages under divorce and knowing some part of me, like, this is the first time I've actually intentionally chosen this relationship. And it was when I knew that I, you know what, this, I might want a divorce. I might want out. It wasn't until I might choose out by looking in those yellow pages and really seriously going, I have a choice. What do I want? And going, okay, you know, closing the yellow pages and knowing for the first time I am choosing this relationship.
What was your life like after that? Or I guess, you know, we heard, how many years is it? So that was 1995, you said?
Yeah.
So we've gone for 12 years now.
Yeah,
yeah, 13. Yeah, it's awesome. It's like more awesome every day. The real life now with skin, it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
How is it for you?
It's just, I'm so much more aware now of what's me and what's Anne and the boundary between us. And when I start putting stuff on Anne, I think that was the main thing. I now see her so much clearer as Anne. And I can love this woman called Anne and get all my stuff off.
If there were a reason for the two of you to be together, for your bodies, your souls, your minds to have found each other and to continue to choose each other every day, what would that reason be?
We were, and continue to be, a hand-in-glove fit for exploring all kinds of, I have to say it, the dysfunction in the beginning. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were so perfectly matched, you know, in exploring each other's, you know, dysfunctions and our own together.
We had a lot of fun, too.
Oh, yeah, we had a lot of fun.
And sex and everything.
Yeah, the sex and the fun and the mouths and the, yeah, all that stuff, definitely. We complement each other, and it's for growing. It's just for growing. It's like Anna's on that level, just the perfect mirror for me to keep growing.
How so? How does that work?
Oh, I'm always getting reflected back. Just like, oh God, I'm starting to take care of her again. And I mean, all the other stuff continues to be amazing.
Other stuff meaning?
Oh, the kissing, making love.
So that hasn't stopped.
Oh my
God. Oh God.
Oh no, our mouths really like each other.
Yeah, the whole naked playground just, it deepens. Just the way, you know, if you just keep being open as a person and then open to each other, it's like, whoa, this field keeps opening. There are new flowers in it or deeper roots.
32 years later, mm-hmm. how do you think about the one? And how do you think about it in the context of your relationship?
There's something about having this one person who's traveled so far and deep and faithfully, like that whatever shows up, you know, to stay connected and to find the love that's past the pain and the truth that's past the lie. And we just have a fucking great time together. And we have so much fun. I mean, it blows my mind that, you know, we have a breakfast conversation and I'm still finding out new things or how much I love talking to him. You know, so clothed and unclothed, that I can continue to have someone that travels with me in such an evolutionary way that awakens me and turns me on.
The other question I want to ask, though, is do you ever feel like having a one, like having this person that you're committing to, even if it's on a daily basis, do you ever feel like that closes off your options? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that's sort of the conversation we're in now. Is, you know, what is, we're clearly together, right? Here we are. And monogamy, I mean, the only thing that comes to mind is like monogamy, you know, other women, other men. Like,
non-monogamy, you mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. In that we're monogamous, are we
missing something?
Are we missing something?
So there is that question.
You know, it's interesting. I think that I'd have to reframe it because I don't feel at all like I'm missing something. It would just be if something else came my way. You know, like at One Taste, when I went to the women's workshop, you know, it's like, wow. My experience is that if there was some life survey, if really my life force wanted that, it's not a threat to the relationship. And we'll just stay in conversation about it, you know, and just have fun with it.
Yeah, it's just exploring it. It's a conversation.
So you're ready for the ride?
Yeah.
Whatever it
is. Yeah. It's not about the safety anymore.
Yeah. The beautiful ride.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Before we close out the show, I just want to remind you that if you're looking for the one, you'll want to receive Steph's tips on seduction by going to onetaste.us/seduction. Now I can say thanks for listening. We always appreciate it and would love to hear from you. You can write to me at judysilber@onetaste.us. If you want more information about One Taste, check out our website at onetaste.us or just stop in. We like visitors and have had quite a few recently from listeners who were visiting San Francisco. For transcripts, go to personallifemedia.com. I'm Judy Silber, and that's all until next time.
Some people say you get one crisis in your life that if you can get through it, changes who you are.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.